It is January the 3rd, 2017. I would like to open the first meeting of a brand new year and call it to order. Won't you please stand with me as we recite the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Ms. Nauzer? Ms. Peters? Mr. Treese? Mr. Ruffin?
Present.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Thank you. For the members of the City Council, you've had an opportunity to review the minutes of December 5th, 2016. I will entertain a motion and a second for the approval of those minutes.
So moved.
Mr. Scala has moved and seconded by?
Mr. Thomas.
Are there any questions, discussions, changes, or corrections? If not, all in favor of accepting the minutes of December 15th will respond by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? We also have a printed agenda. Are there any adjustments to the agenda?
Clyde, I'd like to ask for two ordinances to be removed from the consent agenda placed on old business. They are B-341-16 and B-342-16.
Thank you. Are there any other changes to the agenda? If there are none, then I will ask for a motion and a second for approval of the agenda as adjusted.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Scholar and seconded by Mr. Thomas. All in favor, respond by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? There are none opposed. So the agenda stands approved as adjusted. Good evening, everyone. Once again, our mayor, Mr. Brian Treese, is not with us this evening. So in my capacity as mayor pro tem, I am honored to sit in his behalf. We will move expeditiously through this meeting as much as possible. There will be several opportunities for public comment, public hearings, old business, new business, and the comment section at the end of the meeting. Now, those who are here to represent an organization, you will be allowed 5 minutes. Those who are representing themselves will be allowed 3 minutes. You will know your time is up when the red light flashes. So when you see the red light, please move quickly to the end of your presentation. In fact, if you find that if you're representing yourself and someone else has spoken ahead of you who has presented a similar point of view, we respectfully ask that you acknowledge that and allow the comments to stand. If you are in need of an agenda, there are printed agendas that are always available. Good. So at this point, we will move to there are no special items, no appointments to boards and commissions, so we have two scheduled public comments. And so at this time, I will call for Martha Brownlee, who will present information on community policing, a critical opportunity. Good evening, Ms. Brownlee.
Good evening. I could never get this quite adjusted. My name is Martha Brownlee. I'm here with Race Matters. 702 South Greenwood is my address. I wanted to begin with a shout out to Mike Hester and his community outreach team with congratulations on the COPS funding for 4 additional community policing officers. While this is great news, it does not, however, address the elephant in the room. Inequity, is my belief, is the elephant in the room that no one talks about. And it's all around us. It is not equitable that the policemen and women we depend on to protect and serve us are overworked, underpaid, and stretched to the breaking point. Incident policing is about efficiency. Police should not be about assembly line efficiency. This is an incredibly complex task that requires not only dedication to fairness in law enforcement, but critical thinking and judgment to make potentially life and death decisions in an instant. Police work in a truly free society must be about equity rather than efficiency. As parents, we learn about many forms of inequity from the stories about Rockbridge. I was horrified by the number of well-to-do white teens from the Fifth Ward drinking, drugging, and driving. However, we will not have equity in the form of collection of fine revenues unless police saturation levels in the Fifth Ward are equivalent to those in the First. Another example of inequity is access to alternative sentencing courts. When my friend's 20-something-year-old son had enough DWIs to go to court, the family had the financial resources for a private attorney who got him sentenced to drug court. When poor people of color do not have resources for private counsel and go to prison instead of alternative court sentencing, it perpetuates the inequity of the cycle of disenfranchisement, unemployment, and continued poverty. A city council-related example of inequity is the Henson Creek sewer extension, I believe. Before my involvement with Race Matters Friends, I trusted that the city government would not allow initiatives that did not serve the greater public good to go forward. I did not understand that wealthy interest groups lobby for initiatives that stand to benefit them at the expense of taxpayers. I did not understand that developers who made immediate profits from expensive apartments built in downtown Columbia paid virtually nothing for infrastructure costs. I was unaware that the ballot initiative proposed by council members Thomas and Scala to require a mere 25% of infrastructure costs be paid by developers was blitzkrieged by those same special interest groups who intentionally misled citizens, indicating the initiative would cost rather than save tax dollars. Continued use of the city's resources on a project that will benefit wealthy developers who will act against the city's vote to curtail sprawl, while the sewer infrastructure in the oldest parts of the city remain inadequate for those who already live within the city limits, is a classic perpetuation of inequity. Ultimately, as I've said, I believe policing is an equity issue. Last year, I begged the city, the CPD to take the steps needed for us to organize on their behalf, on the behalf of overworked, underpaid policemen and women, to get the needed funding to implement comprehensive citywide community policing. In the spirit of this season of giving, may we recommit ourselves to building beloved community. I respectfully ask the City Council, Mr. Mathis, and the mayor who's not here, to formally request that the CPD use the DOG's National Initiative for Building Community Trust and Justice as a model for changing police policy with transparent community input, and determine an estimated budget needed for full staffing so that we can move forward with an equitable ballot initiative in which everyone wins. Thank you.
Thank you. Josie Sullivan, would you please come forward?
In your underwear. I'm very nervous, I'm sorry. My name is Josie Sullivan. I live at 713 West Ash, and I'm going to show you some pictures of something that I've been dealing with for 9 years. And I have written emails, I've made calls. That's my house. And that is looking at my house. The crack that you see is an indicator of where the stormwater goes over the, well, I don't really have curbs, they're 100 years old. So you can also see how the street is higher than the sidewalk. Let's see, there's another picture. What happens is the stormwater goes in between those two houses. And right now in the summer, I'm finding that I am having incredible damage to my house and to my foundation. Let's see. There you can see the curb, what's kind of left of the curb. And that's one of the places where the stormwater jumps over, and the sidewalk actually is starting to sink, and it's now leaning towards my house. You can see that's what the curb is. That road has been paved over three times, and on the other side of the road, it's actually four roads. Alrighty, that is, that's looking, I'm so sorry. I'm on the southwest corner of Anderson. And you can, I put this in because there's a curb that was redone and I really like it. And I would really like to have one of those. that is looking, I'm on the north side of the street and I'm looking east. And what happens is because the road has been paved so many times, it kind of goes into that corner and down the sidewalk towards my house. There you can, I'm kitty corner to my house on the west south side, and it flows from this area, and I'll show you, this is Anderson Street, and this was redone very nicely with new sidewalks and new curbs, and it has a, you know, it drains from there straight down to my house. So I've pretty much become the city storm. Now you can see that the rain is coming over the driveway. Now I will say, back a few years ago, the city did try to lift my driveway, and they just couldn't get it high enough for that water to not crest over it. So that picture is actually before the last road was paved on it. So that's only on road two. Here I have a video, and this is a quick video. This will be the water coming off of ash down my driveway, and this is before, oh, I'm so sorry. There, okay, it's coming off of ash, it's coming down, and then there's a river into my yard. Now this is before I did the $6,000 worth of improvements this year, which actually is a half a year salary for me. So you'll see the improvements that I made based on city suggestions. There you see that I've built up the ground around. That was city suggestions. That's my driveway. I've actually had to buy two loads of gravel because literally one day I got out of my car and my foot sunk. And that was water coming down. Now my neighbor, who I share the driveway with, actually had her sewer line collapse, but I'm not here for her problem. So this is another short video. Okay, I see. Okay, so this is the improvement, dry creek bed, and they told me to take all the water to the corner of my property, and I see I'm running out of time. Okay, so all the water goes to that fence. That garage, which the current owners did not build, but it was not approved, that garage is in the direct path for the stormwater to go to Flat Branch Creek. So that's where, so I am the storm drain. It all ends in my yard. That's another picture of what's happening behind my fence. And there you can see the mulch. When the rain goes over, it moves the mulch over the sidewalk. That mulch was very high before this. I continue to try to build up. There's a crack in my foundation that has been recent. I've got the ruler there. I'm measuring how fast things are moving. That crack is in the southwest corner, which is the whole corner is where that water comes down. None of these problems I had when I bought the house. This is my last. Okay, so that's it. That's what I'm asking for, is a sidewalk and that doesn't, you know, sink, and a storm drain and a curb. And this has been 9 years, please. Please help me. So I thank you for your time, I really do, and all the things you do. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. It is not the practice of the council to respond to schedule public comments, but I will say that we are very familiar with the issues. And following our conversation on December the 1st, I shared anew your concerns with the city manager, and we are working on addressing your concerns. Thank you. We will now move to old business. Madam Clerk, would you read B3916?
Council Bill 34916 is an ordinance authorizing acceptance of a COPS hiring program grant from the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services to fund four new police officer positions, amending the FY 2017 annual budget to add police officer positions in the Police Department Operations Division, appropriating funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Thank you. Chief Burden?
I'm here primarily to answer questions, but I will tell you a little bit about the grant. This is the first time that we have been awarded the grant. We actually were going to seek eight officers, but as you can tell, it's the city's obligation increases over the 3 years, as it goes through the grant. And then the fourth year, we have to take the full expense of those officers. After conversations with the city manager, we decided that four was probably more doable than eight. So that's what we applied for, and we were awarded four officers. It's based on a lot of things from the Department of Justice, one of which is crime rates. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't qualified in the past, to be perfectly honest with you. Cities like Springfield and Missouri get them just about every year. So we got these four. We are going to give military preference to people coming out of the military. We think that helped us a little bit, too, as far as getting the grant. And I'm here to answer any questions for you.
Are there any questions from council? Mr. Scala?
Just a question. I mean, this is hardly settled right now. We've been in the midst of some discussions as to how to enhance the capacity of the police department. A couple of years ago, we made an attempt at this. It was alluded to in some of the remarks just recently. That was not successful. So wherever that goes, and whatever those funds are and the mechanism by which we get those funds or convince the public that they ought to help us with getting those funds. I take it that this fourth year period is contingent to some degree, or is it totally independent of any anticipation of additional funding in the future? I mean, do we have maybe the city manager can answer this. Is there a plan to get to this fourth year should that either succeed or, God forbid, not succeed a situation like that?
Well, that's one reason we thought four rather than eight. We have a couple of ways to go at funding this. So the key thing tonight is you're authorizing entering the grant, and so it will come back to you to fund it. There are a couple of scenarios we have to do that, and we can do this without a ballot. So exactly how we fund it, though, is not decided, and that will come back to you.
Yes, sir. Chief Burton, have there been decisions on how these officers are going to be used?
Actually, we wrote it into the grant that we would use them in community policing and reduction of violence. So our plan is to add to the community outreach unit these four positions as we get them. And we wouldn't be able to do it all at once. We'll have to do it as we hire them. But that's our intent, and we're pretty much tied to that because that's the way we wrote the grant.
So is it possible that some of the mayor's task force on community violence recommendations, there's a role as far as reentry kind of liaisoning with probation and parole? I wondered about the focused deterrence program.
That's coming anyway.
Is that... Okay, that's moving forward.
Yes, sir. Even if you decided not to approve these four officers tonight, that's moving forward. The focused deterrence program will be starting very soon.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas?
Did you include in the application information about the existing COU program, the expansion to the three neighborhoods?
I did not. It wasn't required as part of the grant. Basically, what they ask you is how you intend to use the officers. And then they pick, they've got buzzwords, obviously. Community policing is one of those. So is violent deterrence to violence. So we included all those things and told them that's how we would use the officers, and I think that was instrumental in us getting them.
Well, I think it's very good news because I do think that the COU program is being effective. It's improving relationships, and happy to see it expanded. Now, we have quite a lot of vacancies at the moment. It's obviously difficult recruiting officers. How many vacancies do we have right now?
Actually, we have about 10, but we've hired 7 officers over the past 3 weeks.
Okay.
Some of them are going to be started the academy this week, and then mm-hmm. a couple of them are already trained and can hit the street, but they'll have to go through the field training program.
Will these 4 positions, I know they're limited to military veterans.
Not limited, but they encourage us to give preference.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Do you think those will be hard to fill as well? Will they be designated as community policing positions? Will that make them more attractive?
It should, and I've already asked some of our officers that are in the military that if they hear of people coming out to let us know. And Jesse back there in the back said he's got a friend that's going to apply with us already. So I think it'll be pretty easy to get those 4.
Is it fair to say that the community policing work is more attractive than regular policing?
You know, it depends on the individual. I think that people like community policing, and I think our officers in general like doing community policing, but they also like having the time to do it, and that's what kills them. You know, I know you probably find this hard to believe, but we have officers that get frustrated with the number of calls that are holding because they can't get to them.
I can totally believe that.
But I mean to the point where it's a major frustration for them,
yeah,
you know, and
stress.
They don't like having to tell people no and tell people that it's going to be another hour and that sort of thing. So it really makes it hard on our officers when we're understaffed like that because they're the ones that get the brunt of when the citizen is angry when they finally do get there.
And am I right in thinking, I think I've heard this from the city manager, that your goal is ultimately to have a program that's adequately staffed that every officer can have some time dedicated to community
Correct.
Proactive policing?
Correct. And we would come up with a formula that would give every single officer that was in patrol time for doing community policing in the area where they're assigned.
Yeah, I very much support that.
Thank you.
Can I just have one more question. I just really didn't want to let the opportunity slide by focusing in on what you said. And you said something to the effect that we often aren't able to take advantage of some of these opportunities because our community in some ways has a better record in terms of crime prevention and crime solution than others. And that's not to say that, and I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. We have our issues, obviously.
Sure,
we're understaffed,
sure.
and any victim is a victim across the board here. But it's worth getting that word out to folks that in some ways we are in much better shape than other communities are.
This community is really an anomaly. We're a diverse community. We're a community that has a very low crime rate, at least for right now, and we hope to keep it that way. There are other communities that we compare ourselves to that are not in such good shape. The Benchmark Cities Group is a good example of that. You know, we compare ourselves to those 38 other cities across the United States, and they're struggling as well.
Thank you.
I have just one question. This is such an important opportunity to recruit a more diverse police force. Are there any requirements in the grant, or is there a vision within the department to seize this opportunity for more diversity?
Well, we obviously are on the lookout for diverse applicants all the time. So it's not written into the grant, but it is definitely something we'd be open to. If we had 4 very diverse candidates that came in that were interested in doing this, that would be something we could definitely do. And I want to make sure you understand that this will probably end up being some officers that we already have that'll take some of these positions, and the people that we hire will come in. You wouldn't want to put a brand new officer in this position unless they've had some previous experience. So they would need a couple of years under their belt before they'd want to get out there and engage in this kind of policing.
How has your diversity initiative been with the 7 that you've hired recently?
Not good. It's just not, we're not getting the applicants. And I really think we need to do something locally. You know, at our high school level, there's people talked about, you know, having a boys and girls club chapter. We talked about that having at the new substation where kids can come and interact with the police. Those things are successful when it happens. And you know, police officers go out there and ride hoverboards with kids out there in the parks and things like that. And those are the kinds of things when they have the time to do it that will let kids see officers as human beings, recognize their humanity, and not just somebody that's driving by in a car. So it's a long-term effort. It's one we're committed to. And if you have any ideas, we'd love to hear them.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak?
So I have a couple of questions. I have only had a chance to briefly peruse the grant. And I agree it's unfortunate that we felt like we needed to only go for four. New officers, but congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So I have two questions. One, to follow up on Dr. Ruffin's questions about the recruitment of underrepresented officers to our officer corps. There's actually quite a bit of HR work that's been done on proactive recruitment that I would encourage your staff to look into beyond. We just aren't getting people in the pipeline. I think I read something not too long ago about some work that you all had been trying to do down at Lincoln University.
Yes, ma'am.
I think reaching out to those kinds of things and doing a hard press to try to convince people to come here, including in the military, rather than just having your guys who know have buddies, but reach out to the recruiting stations in town and who knows who are coming home, even regionally, not just convince folks that are maybe coming home to St. Louis or Kansas City that are, that this would be a good place to raise a family, to something that's more than just waiting people to come to you.
Right.
I think would be really important and crucial for the work that we're trying to do in terms of building relationships with our officers and the community that they serve. Ideally, they would also be folks that are from the neighborhoods they're trying to serve, but if that's a generation down the line, then go get them where you can. The other question I had is that in conjunction with the community-oriented policing, it mentions the SARA model.
Yes.
And the problem-oriented policing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if this is an area where we've done some of the data analysis, and I know that Jerry's probably still trying to crank away on some of that, that there may be some questions about the efficiency, actually. This is actually kind of not counter to your point, actually, about efficiency, but in some ways, focusing on these saturation points and perhaps in ways that are disparate across the city, you end up stopping a lot of people and bothering a lot of people who have nothing to do with what's going on in an effort to find one or two guys who are the source of the problem. And that create, so that's actually a very inefficient way of catching criminals, it seems like, to a layperson, I'll admit. Have you looked at ways of, or at least would you be willing to have some more conversations about how you deploy those models in practice and how you might kind of understand how effective those are being? Does that make sense?
The SARA model is based on a book by a man named Herman Goldstein called Problem-Oriented Policing. And the SARA model stands for Scanning, Analysis, Response, and Assessment. Nowhere in it does it say you have to use enforcement. In fact, they emphasize non-traditional approaches to solving problems long-term. I've used the model for years, and what it basically entails is going in and find out why policing as we've been doing it isn't working. Locking people up is not always the answer, right? And you look at the New York model where they went in and they used enforcement for the window washers in downtown back in the 90s, and then they were lauded because they reduced the crime rate so significantly. But like you said, a lot of people got caught up in that vacuum of going out there and for very minor offenses were going to jail. So that's not what the SARA model is about at all.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Good evening, Tracy Wilson, Cleat Camp for Race Matters Friends. Quickly, just two things as I'm thinking about the SARA model and all these things we're talking about. We have a Mayor's Task Force on Community Violence report that came out in November of 2014, and it actually lists all of the repeat offenders, right? So we have a deterrence program. We know who the repeat offenders are. I don't understand this saturation model. I don't understand why. But we'll have a conversation about it. I'm just putting it out there on the record. Also in your grant, which I'm not sure everyone was able to read, there's some more information here on page 14 about data and problems. And again, these things were addressed in the mayor's task force on community violence. So we are still interested in that dashboard that we brought forth a few weeks ago so that we can see where your progress is on meeting those items that were put forth in the task force reports, with the dovetail with some of the things that you said that you're going to do as a part of this grant. I would have liked to have known about this grant in advance to give input on it, because I believe if you are really doing community-oriented policing, you're talking to the public about your strategy and your plan for policing, that you don't do it first and then come back and say that this is what we're going to do. We find that very problematic. It sounds like the conversation we're having still nibbles around the edges around community-oriented policing. When we use the word community-oriented policing as a buzzword, we're still not talking about the philosophy of community-oriented policing. And we will say it again, and we'll keep saying it, we want the city to embrace a philosophy of community-oriented policing, not in three areas, not for some people, but as a philosophy for the force. And I have emailed all of you council members of this book. It's called Rethinking Community Policing. It talks about deliberative democratic theory being the engine driving community policing, because it's about a public policy, letting it being driven by the public. And the other one, which I'm told that you're reading with your officers, is called Pulled Over. Pulled Over, How Police Stops Define Race and Citizenship, by Charles Epp. I would love for Charles Epp to come to town and have a conversation with us. I think this is a book that we should have a public conversation about, so that we are all on the same page about what we want from our policing and what policing is actually doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from the public? Statements from the council? There are none. I'll ask the clerk to call the roll.
Council Bill 349-16, Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Thank you. Would you please read B350-16?
Council Bill 350-16 is an ordinance authorizing an agreement for transfer of real estate, establishment of funding account, and provision for administrative services with Columbia Community Land Trust Incorporated, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Thank you. Staff?
Thank you, Councilman Ruffin, and good evening. This is another step along the way of the making of a community land trust for Columbia, and in this particular example, we're looking at the Lynn Street Cottages project on the north side of Lynn Street in central Columbia. With me is Randy Cole from our Housing and Community Development Office, and he'll tell you a little bit more about this council bill. Randy?
Thanks. So the ordinance is really where the rubber meets the road on forming our community land trust organization. So it does three things. It authorizes the city manager to transfer the land over on Lynn Street, the Lynn Street Cottages, to the community land trust organization. It establishes the funding for it, provides funding for the construction of the homes as well as its first year operations, and then also provides provisions for city staff administrative services, or what my role will be with the community land trust organization. So a little background to date. Council approved implementation of the Columbia Community Land Trust at its September 6th meeting of 2016. He then appointed the board for the Columbia Community Land Trust on November 21st. So we've got our board in place. Our articles of incorporation have been drafted and are on file with Missouri Secretary of State, so we have a legal entity. And the city land over at Lynn Street Cottages has been graded, and the sewers installed, and they're very close to being ready to develop upon transfer of the property. So the land that we're talking about tonight is 109, 111, and 113 Lynn Street. The last meeting we were talking about the properties to the west and east of it. Council approved the purchase of this land on August 17th of 2015. He also approved $200,000 in FY 2014 general fund savings for the development of four homes at Lynn Street Cottages within the 2016 budget. And then council approved the amended PUD on 12-7-2015 for this development. And then the grading and sewer installation was completed this last September, or excuse me, December. So this is a map. I think most of you are familiar with this map, but the properties we're talking about tonight are the three in yellow on Lynn Street there. These are the ones that will be where the first four homes will be developed at the Lynn Street Cottages. This is a diagram of the conceptual layout of Lynn Street Cottages. It's not the actual design of the homes. Those will be designed through a procurement process of the developer, but that's a concept of what the layout will look like. So the funding provided through the agreement is $200,000 in FY 2014 general fund savings. Within that $200,000, the agreement authorizes up to $10,000 for the first year startup costs. This came out of a few meetings back, right at the end of the fiscal year, where you all wanted to have money go to JobPoint. We decided to take this out of the $200,000 so we could do both those items. And it also has the remaining funding of that $200,000 going to the development of those homes. It also includes $40,000 in CDBG funds for the installation of four solar systems, one for each home. There's also $40,000 in CDBG reserves to assist us in obtaining development financing that upon sale the homes will be returned to the city. So $10,000 per home will be there in the event that the homes don't sell or are not rented in a timely fashion. I'm optimistic that they will sell. We've had a lot of interest from the neighborhood. Had a few people come into our office even. I'm pretty confident that we're in a good place to get those sold. The last item of the agreement is administrative services. So the city will be providing this for the first 3 years at no charge. Both us and the CLT, or the Community Land Trust Organization, could extend that for two more years. But the services will include board staff support, so assisting the board in their monthly meetings, managing the daily operations, determining the participant eligibility, our home buyer orientation course, stewardship of the CLT properties, and then marketing and outreach to the public. Our first Columbia Community Land Trust board meeting will be next week, January 10th, from 7 to 8:30. Mike Brown will be in town January 10th and 11th, and our meeting will be over at Central Latino. I thought it'd be a good opportunity to have our first meeting out in the neighborhood where we're going to be doing the work. I think that'd be a good experience for our board to be out in the neighborhood. So I'll take any questions.
Great. Any questions from council?
So the $40,000 out of CDBG reserves for guarantees, that will eliminate the city requirement to provide financial security for the loans, correct?
That's correct. How it was originally proposed to council was Providence Bank wanted the city to guarantee the loan. The deposit of $10,000 per home removes that requirement, so this puts us in a better position.
Brandy, the city is providing staff support to the Community Land Trust for at least the first 3 years. I assume that's you.
Yep.
Is that pulling you away from other work, or is this essentially the work you would be attempting to do anyway?
It's certainly, the last year I've done some additional work to move it this far. It'll certainly compete with other things I need to get done, but I've been able to manage this past year, so you just kind of get it done.
Based on the model of other land trusts that you've looked at, is it a feasible goal that in a certain number of years the land trust will be able to staff itself?
Yeah, I think it all depends on more so the how many homes we get in our portfolio versus years. We originally talked about having the city staff support it for 5 years. That still might be realistic. But as we all know, things change very quickly, and three-year plans can go out of date even pretty quickly. So I think 3 years is a better goal to reevaluate. I think especially this first year, we'll do seven homes. So we could be in a position to move it out on its own if that's what the city and the community, the board of the Columbia Community Land Trust want to do. that might be feasible. If not, I think we'd be in a good position to work that direction during those next 2 years. But I think reevaluating at year three is a good idea versus waiting 5 years to reevaluate.
All right.
Any other questions? Are there any questions or statements from the public? Welcome, Mr. Cullimore.
Thank you, Dan Cullimore, 715 Lyon Street. Last month, you appointed me to the Community Land Trust Board. I want to thank you for this opportunity. I live in an affordable house. I have done so for at least 25 years. And I live in an affordable neighborhood. Buildings, homes, need a solid foundation. To build an affordable housing program also requires a solid foundation. And I think this step that you're taking tonight will do that for the Land Trust Board. The Land Trust Board offers the city an opportunity to develop a sustainable program for financing affordable housing. We haven't had something like this in the past. It allows the city to retain a certain degree of equity while allowing the purchasers of those homes to also develop equity and move some steps up the ladder into the middle class. And so I want to thank you for this and encourage you to support it however it needs to be supported. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Are there any other statements from council?
We moved through. I just want to give a little background on Community Land Trust. I served on the steering committee with Mr. Cullimore and looking forward to being the council liaison to the Community Land Trust board. We're going to have a busy first meeting to accept properties and adopt bylaws. And we're moving forward very quickly, which is a great issue to be wrestling with, because we're going to have these four homes in our portfolio, and we have several more on track through another project. So a community land trust preserves our housing. We've providing homeowners assistantship for a long time through federal community development block grant and home funds. And we have, that's been a one-shot and done deal. We help a family buy a home. They get a 10-year forgivable loan if they live in their house for 10 years. Then it can sell and it no longer becomes an affordable home. It could become a rental property or can move into the market and no longer. And the Community Land Trust is going to preserve that affordability literally forever. Well, for 100-year repeatable lease, so for the next 200 years. And so beyond just so that on average, each of these homes will help a new family every 7 years, which is about when people change over, because and then in fact, besides just protecting the subsidy, the Community Land Trust, as Mr. Cullimore alluded to, the subsidy grows as land values rise, that equity is split between the resident and the land trust. And so that subsidy grows over time, and when you get a big enough portfolio, that becomes another subsidy that you can bring another house into. And it's also in the form of a nonprofit, will allow, be a vehicle for community-minded citizens who support affordable housing to make donations of land or money to support our efforts of addressing housing affordability, which is an increasingly big problem in Columbia. And there's nothing in our demographics that say it's going to get any better unless we make strong, proactive steps to address it. And this is going to be a small but critical piece. And it's going to build over time, and the city of the future is going to be proud that we made that decision to make this early investment now.
Yes.
I'd like to just acknowledge the hard work that you've done, Mike, to over a couple of years to bring this about, and Randy and Tim on the staff side. I do think it's a significant moment to start creating permanent affordability. We had a homelessness summit in the fall, and the Housing First model is contingent on a whole series of stepping stones, and this is a critical stepping stone in that path of climbing out of poverty and out of homelessness into affordable housing and into market rate housing. And with the land trust now, the stepping stone stays there after one person steps on, doesn't get pulled up. So I'm excited to support this ordinance.
Thank you. Yes.
I guess everybody has to have their say here. And mindful of the pro tem's suggestion that I not repeat some of this, obviously thanks goes out to some of the folks that worked on this for a long time. I think we've had a pretty thoughtful discussion, even though it seems to have been a pretty rapid discussion at the same time. I'm glad this is rolling out as quickly as it is. I mean, I see this as a kind of diversity for affordable housing alternatives. And we have some other mechanisms or tools in our toolkit or arrows in the quiver or however you want to put it, but this is another one of those, I think, that makes a lot of sense. And it builds equity in two different ways, and that is for the homeowner himself and also for the program itself. So this is the kind of thing that is really one of those those win-win situations that we all seek that we don't often find. But good work to all the folks that worked on this, and I'm glad to see this happen and glad to see this move forward.
Certainly for those who are living in the Lynn Street area, the return of a sense of community pride in their neighborhood, the sense of security and safety will have long-ranging generational benefits that will inevitably impact many other areas other than housing in terms of promoting not only, as we have said, social equity, but also restoring a sense of hope to the community. So it's been great. Thank you. If there are no other statements from the council, Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Council Bill 35016, Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Would you please read B341-16?
Council Bill 34116 is an ordinance amending Chapter 14 of the City Code to establish one-way direction for the alley between 8th Street and College Avenue and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Ruffin. Staff is proposing to designate a section of the alley located 180 feet east of Shore Street, easterly to College Avenue, as a one-way traffic because it is too narrow to accommodate two-way traffic. This change will allow traffic to exit the alley onto College Avenue, but will prohibit College Avenue traffic from entering the alley. However, a portion of the alley between Shore Street and 180 feet east of Shore Street is wide enough to accommodate two-way traffic, and staff recommends this section remain two-way to accommodate two pizza delivery establishments, which drivers regularly use daily. The proposed layout was discussed with the CID Operations Committee and staff from Stevens College. Both parties were supportive of the modifications. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from council?
Yeah, I asked to have this pulled from consent because I'm interested in the statement that one of the benefits or one of the reasons for this is that you don't want, I guess it would be southbound traffic on College, slowing down and turning right into this alley because the operating speeds on College Avenue are higher than would be considered safe. What would be a suitable operating speed to allow a turn like that into a narrow alley?
I would recommend somewhere around 10 to 15 miles an hour to actually slow down to make that turn. The radius, we did not do an auto turn on it for the type of vehicle that would use that, but those type of turns would generally create maybe a sudden rear end opportunity there if somebody's not anticipating that turn.
Not
so
paying attention.
It's something that's just recommended that if possible we'd eliminate.
But this is a particularly sharp turn into an alley. It's not necessarily a general situation on every
Correct.
Alley intersection with a road.
You can
like
see the
College.
Skew a little bit. It's not really coming in clear, but the skew of that angle. Sometimes you'd also tend to have people drift in the other lane to make a wider turn, which then would impact that next lane. So that would be something that we'd discourage as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Any other questions from council? Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak? If there's no one, Any final statements from council? Not? Would you please call the roll?
Council Bill 341-16, Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Would you please read B42-16?
Council Bill 342-16 is an ordinance authorizing a right-of-use license permit with Room 38 for the construction, installation, maintenance, and operation of fencing and an awning in a portion of the right-of-way located on the south side of Walnut Street and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Thank you. In June, Council authorized an agreement with SBJ Holdings for reimbursement of cost to the city for widening the sidewalk on a portion of East Walnut Street along the north side of the Room 38 restaurant and lounge. The additional work was completed as part of the Avenue of the Columns project and with the intent that Room 38 would construct a patio area within the portion of the right-of-way on the south side of Walnut. The cost for the additional work was around $11,735 and was paid to the city on December 20th. The owner of Room 38 is requesting to install and maintain an awning and fencing associated with the proposed patio area. It is a right of use. If the right of use is granted, staff will require a 6-foot sidewalk be maintained along the property along Walnut. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thomas?
Yeah, I got a question. So this ordinance authorizes the city to do the work and get reimbursed by the private business owner?
No, the original agreement that was in, I believe it was June, was the sidewalk expansion as part of the Avenue Columns. That was the done by the Avenue Columns contractor and then reimbursed to the city. This is a right of use for the property owner to place items in the right-of-way that are not typical for that we typically have that would be maintained by the city. So the right of use allows them to use the space for the awning, for the different amenities he's proposing, with stipulations that at a later date, if the council decides that that space needs to be utilized back for public space, then it would be the owner's responsibility to remove all those items.
And the space is currently being used for car parking?
It is not. It was bumped out to wrap around the corner for, I'm going to see if I get another diagram. There we go.
Okay.
For the wider sidewalk in front of that area. And you could see the arrow pointing to, and I don't know if I can, this is the additional concrete that was installed as part of the Avenue Column.
That
has been reimbursed. That expenditure has been reimbursed to the city.
So a parking space has been lost there.
That's correct.
In the project. And was that at the request of the owner of Room 38?
Yes, and that was in the agreement that council authorized in June.
Okay, so we already dealt with that. And is the owner of the restaurant or the property paying for future parking revenue, or is it considered that they have, because they're adjacent, abutting, they have the right to make that request?
In that approval in June, this was an expansion, a pilot expansion of the Avenue of Columns theme, if mm-hmm. you will. So it has the decorative concrete, the plantings, the benches, the area expanded around the corner. Mm.
Well, I really like it. I've walked around the area with the new traffic control calming system there. Seems to be working well.
Yes.
Is that your impression?
Yeah, we've had some, it's on some sensitivity issues with picking up pedestrians only, so we're really tweaking and the technology is there, mm-hmm. but we're fine-tuning that, and it seems to be working better.
And from an aesthetic point of view, I think when
yes.
this project is finished and they have the restaurant seating there, I think it's going to look really nice. Great. Thank you.
Any other questions from council? Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak? Not? Any final statements from council?
Yeah, I'll just comment on this is the bulb out has really narrowed the pedestrian walk across. We were able to eliminate a light. I don't see any safety issues. I walk down that intersection quite a bit. I find it easier to navigate now than it did. It is much more attractive, and this fits in with our plans for downtown. where, you know, we want to have more down outside kind of seating options. Doesn't really apply to your department, but I do, as we create more outside and patios, just to make sure that the police and restaurateurs are aware that the smoking ordinance applies to patio seating as well. So even though there's not that smoking allowed at restaurants, so want to continue to be vigilant about that. So I think this makes sense. This agreement protects the city's long-term interests, but allows a service that adds to the vitality of downtown to expand. Looks like a good thing for everybody involved.
Anyone else?
I just it just brings up a question that you just piqued my curiosity, Nick, because I can remember the discussions that we had with respect to the smoking ordinance and so on. But it's my recollection that there was a bit of an exception for outdoor areas, but it may conflict with the distance from the entrances. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but
not your really department, Dave.
But I mean, it seems to me like there was some sort of a patio exception, as long as folks did not have to travel through the. I mean, this is fraught with all kinds of issues, but I'm just thinking that it wasn't just totally prohibited, even though with some of the folks at the time, that would have been the preference. But is my recollection correct, or you're not sure?
I'm not well versed in that.
There is a distance requirement from the door. There's a minimum amount of seating. We didn't bring that information with us today, but we can certainly provide that to the council.
It might be worth looking into to make sure that this is fair for everybody across the board.
It certainly is one of those that's in the public right of way, and you know, if you want to put conditions on it, this is one of those where they're putting some significant improvements in the public right of way. Really at no compensation back to the public. So if you want to put some conditions on how people occupy the right-of-way, and it's different than a sidewalk cafe, so to speak. This one has more improvements in the right-of-way than your typical sidewalk cafe.
Thanks. I appreciate looking into that a little bit.
So. We'll do that and provide you with the information.
All right, thank you. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Council Bill 342-16, Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Thank you. We're moving to the consent agenda. Would you please read the bills and resolutions?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 339-16, 340-16, 343-16, 344-16, 345-16, 346-16, 347-16, 348-16, and resolutions 117 and 217.
Thank you. As it is our tradition, would you please read those again?
Bills 339-16, 340-16, 343-16, 344-16, 345-16, 346-16, 347-16, 348-16, and resolutions 117 and 217.
Thank you. Would you please call the roll?
Mr. Scala.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Trapp.
Yes.
There is nothing under new business. We now move to introduction and first reading. Would you please read those?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 117, 217, 317, 417, 517, 617, 717, 817, and 917, first reading.
Thank you. Final item on our agenda is a report. RP1-17, interdepartmental transfer of funds requests. Purely informational. Thank you.
Any questions? We'll endeavor to answer them.
Okay. Are there any questions? If there are no questions, we will now have an opportunity, if you are here, to make a public comment at the end of the meeting. Now is your time. Is there anyone here who would like to make a statement? There is no one here. Are there any final statements from council today? Yes, Mr. Thomas.
I have, thank you, Clyde. I have three requests of staff. The first one is that the city clerk's office put information about being a candidate for the city council on the city's website. This information apparently isn't there right now. I'd been approached by a couple of people who were interested in running for either the first or the fifth ward, and I kind of wanted to point them where they could find out, you know, the different documents they needed to complete, the 50 signatures, and it's not there. And so I did discuss with Sheila and said that I'd make a formal request for that to be changed so that we and other people have a place to give people information, with the very least that they should contact Sheila to get the packet and so on. So that's the first request. The second request is for the Board of Health to look at licensing of cats. turns out we have an ordinance requiring cats to be licensed, and only 2% at the estimate that Stephanie Browning and I came up with are actually licensed. It's a little better for dogs. We think more like 10%. But there's also a requirement that if a cat, you know what, I don't want to go into the detail of that. What I want to ask is for the Board of Health to look into the requirement for a cat's license. If there is a requirement for a cat's license, whether that should be a requirement that the owner has a cat's license to qualify for in-home impoundment when there is a report of a cat biting somebody, and that is currently the case, even if the cat has a license, has a rabies vaccination and all of the actual health issues taken care of, if the owner has not licensed their cat, they are sort of punished at a higher level, which doesn't make any difference to the safety. And thirdly, there's a rule that cats cannot roam in the community, and that is an offense. So those are the three things I'd like the Board of Health to look at, and I'll put them in an email and send them to Casey so that they're just documented. Third request is for Parks and Rec to reach out to the Columbia School District and discuss a memorandum of agreement with the school district such that patrons of the ARC could park their cars at the school district office on Saturday mornings when there is sometimes a little extra pressure on the parking with the farmers market being there, that this could be agreed between the city and the school district. Peter Stiepelman has told me that they very rarely have any use of that parking lot or building on Saturdays, and that if that agreement can be reached, that should be advertised at the ARC and within city communications and signposted at the site that there's overflow ARC parking there. There already is a nice little walking trail between the corner of the CPS lot and the corner of the ARC lot. So those are my three requests. I will put them in writing to Casey. And finally, I just want to let everybody know, Mike Trapp and I are going to go to the National Smart Growth Conference, which is just down the road in St. Louis at the beginning of next month. Encourage other council members and staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission members as well to consider attending the conference. It's an excellent conference. We've brought back many ideas from that conference, including the STAR Communities program, which Barbara presented to us about earlier. And I think we get a lot of good ideas about what other cities are doing that we want to follow.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, we got the parklet idea at Smart Growth.
Yep, that's another one.
It's a great conference.
Yeah, that was a conference in Kansas City the last time I was there.
Yep.
Parklet. Yeah, it's been to Kansas City and St. Louis in like the last 5 years.
Yes. Just a couple of things. I only had one thing, but a couple of things piqued my memory here. The one I had has to do with a complaint that I got recently about the Ore Street dumpster, and there's some issues with regard to the capacity of the alley, apparently, or the pad to deal with it, given the traffic. And then there are some other issues in terms of the email that I got said the alley is unable to carry the weight of the garbage trucks. The dumpster is in front of a main door and blocks access to the power transformer. Any help or direction would be appreciated. So I just got this email, so I thought we'd look into that and see if we can engender any relief. A couple things. One, Mr. Thomas reminded me this issue of the cat licensing thing. It's interesting. It was one of my constituents in Ward 3 that has this problem, and when I talked to the the director of public health, Stephanie. We were kind of reminiscing where this all came from, and this ordinance had changed apparently in 2010. I was not on the council at that time, but in that period of time, there was this extra requirement that the licensing be a part of this impoundment regime, if any one of seven steps were not included, including the licensing, then the impoundment had to occur in either in a veterinary hospital or in the city's impoundment facility. And it is kind of a peculiar thing, and there hasn't been a lot of success with licensing. As I understand it, the two things that licensing offers pet owners, the one in particular, is that you can return the pet back to the licensed owner if it gets away without going to the pound, essentially, which is an advantage. And the other is to avoid this impoundment thing should there be some sort of bite. So that's a good idea to refer that to the Board of Health. I think we may, in fact, have a bit of a discussion about subsequent ordinance changes should that become necessary, because in my recollection that Tom Rose, the veterinarian at the time, opposed that change in 2010. So I'm not sure where that conversation is, but that's a great idea. And the other is, now that you mentioned the smart growth thing, I intend to attend that meeting as well. You can't hardly not attend it. It's so close. This will be my eighth, I think, smart growth meeting. So it is a very important meeting. And the last time we were in Kansas City, if I remember, a lot of the staff, it was really nice that the staff was able to go as well. We had some planners and some planning and zoning people who actually attended that meeting. And the benefit, I think, was felt throughout the community with some of the information brought back, not only by the council members that attended, but also the staff. So I would encourage even the staff to consider this as close as it is. So that's all I have.
I thought I would have invited staff and made a push, but I know our planning department has been really busy with the zoning ordinance, so
they would love to come.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
Take a break.
So I didn't make a big push because I know staff's had their hands full. But it is a great event if anyone can participate. Josie Sullivan's comments, appreciate that that you and Mr. Ruffin are already working on potential solutions. I know that some of the facts of the matter are at dispute. We run into a lot of these situations, I think, in all of our wards. Before we built as wisely in regards to stormwater, we've created some heritage problems that it's going to take generations to resolve. But I had raised an issue about there's areas where it's maybe not the city's responsibility, but there are some city infrastructure that, you know, is nearby, or that situations, you know, develop that are, you know, really unfortunate. And we had discussed a possibility of a cost-sharing program for those where the city may not be on the hook, but might be in everyone's interest to address some of these issues, because they're bigger than a yard problem. Maybe looking at some cost-sharing. We talked about that with the before the stormwater ballot increase went through, as that being a small portion of those funds. So when staff gets their head above water, sorry, can't even claim that it's late.
Getting later.
I think that's still an idea worthy of development. I know we can't do everything all at once, but I hope that that's still on the radar and something that we can work towards developing.
Anyone else?
Mayor, yes. Pro Tem, if I may,
please.
I do have an answer to Councilman Scala's question, that if we can just get that checked off the list tonight, that would be
Well, we have
easy.
Time.
Can't or cannot smoke.
When it comes to smoking, you may not do it within 20 feet of the entrance door to an establishment, which is non-smoking. On an outdoor patio area, not more than 50% may be designated as a smoking area. And it has to be at least 20 feet from an open door. And any smoking area may not be designated as a smoking area if you're required to pass through if non-smokers are required to pass through it to get to that door. So those are
my recollection. I just didn't know what the numbers were, the distances and so on.
Thank you.
It pretty effectively rules out sidewalk cafes. Yeah, well, yeah. There are other scenarios. Yeah. 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 20 feet's about the width of a street lane. Right. So it's pretty good distance.
The opening of the business.
Right. If there's no one else, the meeting is adjourned.
I think we'll hire you again,
Clark. Yes. 17. 17.